Today's daf in Masechet Chulin brought to you from Yerushalayim Ira Kadesh is daf Yud Daled, and we're holding at the Halakha Mishnah right on the top, which tells us something that doesn't seem to make all that much sense right at the beginning, and that is Hashochet b'Shabbat v'Yom HaKippurim Af Apish Mitchayev b'Nafsho Shechitato Kshera. Somebody does a Shechita on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur, even though he's Chayev Misa, which seems to imply that he's doing it b'Mezid. The shechita is kosher, and it's all right to eat it. Now, how is this possible? I mean, if we're talking about him doing it in a way that is mechayev b'nafsho, and he's amazed, so then didn't we say before that a mumer l'chal Shabbos is considered to be possible for shechita? We ended up with that approach. And there's a fascinating Tosfos' approach here, along with some other Rishonim, which explains a fascinating thing. We see this in several Gemaras, that the first time someone does something that is would imply that he's a mumer doesn't make him a mumer. The first time that he does something, there's always this inyan of tasting iser, you know? So he gives in one time. That doesn't mean that he's a mumer. And therefore, the first time, assuming this was the first time, he doesn't have a din of a mumer l'chal Shabbos. Because of that, the Shrita is kosher, because the fact that it's on Shabbos is not ipso facto a violation of the dinim of Shrita. It's only a question of what kind of person he is. That's the approach of quite a few of Rishonim. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, in the wake of the Rambam, explains it, or, you know, they're not a Pirush on the Mishnah, but the way that they bring the halacha is that af al pi, that ilu haya oseh b'mezid, so meaning it's referring to a din of a shogeg. So the way the Rambam says it is af al pi she'ilu haya mezid haya mischayev b'nafsho on Shabbos or mischayev malchus on Yom HaKippurim, nonetheless shechita kshera. So it's a reference to the chumrah of the maisa and not to the status of the din of the individual who did the shechita. Now, these are the two basic approaches to the Mishnah. It's all very nice to say that the shechita is kosher, that's true. But that doesn't mean it's mutar ba'achila, at least not right away. The shechita kshera could still leave it to be asura ba'achila liyuma. During this day of Shabbos, you would not be allowed to eat the meat. Or during this day of Yom Kippur, anyway, you're not allowed to eat the meat. But that it is an actual Isra of Achila because of the Basar itself. So how does that make sense exactly? You have to wait until after Shabbos. Maybe it's a din of Mukta. And the Gemara is going to take a look at the options. What are the possibilities over here? So Nazmin Chavraya Lemimar. So when this was, remember, quoted in Rav's name. So we're going to refer to it as the Halacha of Rav. So the people that were there learning in the Beis HaMedrash, they wanted to get together to say that Rav holds that the Mishnah is going on Libet Rabbi Yehuda, and that explains why today it will be also. Okay, thank you. Which Rabbi Yehuda? There's a lot of Rabbi Yehuda. I don't know what you mean. Hi, Rabbi Yehuda. Which Rabbi Yehuda are we referring to that explains this? Amar Baba. This is Rabbi Yehuda, who explains that anything that is not Muchan for Shabbos is by definition Muktzah. So remember, the issue of Muktzah is that it is set aside from use on Shabbos. But there's many levels of setting aside. There's a setting aside in which a person actually sets aside. And he says, this thing I don't want to use over Shabbos. Let's say he's got something very valuable, and it's not something he wants used over Shabbos, then he puts it away in a safe. That's mukta. And then if he changes his mind on Shabbos, it's still usher to use it. That's like the ultimate hukta, literal hukta. Then there's things that are hukta because there was no plan on using them. And so if there was no plan on using them, it's as if they were hukta. That would be the opposite extreme, and that would mean that anything that is not mukhan for use on Shabbos is automatically excluded from use on Shabbos. And therefore, if at the beginning of Shabbos it wasn't set aside for use, then it would be usher to use if you actually had used, wanted to change your mind and use it on Shabbat. And then we have the intermediate cases. So we've got cases where something is mukta because at the beginning of Shabbos, it would have been usur to use it. Let's say you've got a lamp that is lit, and now you can't do anything with that because if you move it, you might put out the flame. Or let's say you've got something that is disgusting. So that would be called mukta machmat mi'us. If it's usur, it would be mukta machmat iser. If it's something that's very valuable, you don't want it to get hurt, that would be called mukta machmas chisaron kis, and so on. Now, all of these are different levels in between the overall level of mukta, which is anything that wasn't mukhan to use, and the opposite extreme of only things that were mamish set aside beferish not to use. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, he has a very chomer standard of mukta, and he says anything that is not set aside to be used for Shabbos is considered to be something that is mukta. That's not. Mechatchina tadiluin lifnei abeima. So let's say you've got these pumpkins and you want to cut them up for an animal to use as food on Shabbos. Obviously, we're talking about they were already cut off the ground. We're not talking about chilul Shabbos. We're talking about over here whether there's any iser of cutting them up because of a tircha yitira. Or you could cut up a nevela, lifnei haklavim, and even though, again, it wasn't roi for eating even by the dogs at the beginning of Shabbos, it's no problem, and you can cut it up for dog food. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, if it was not a nevela before Shabbos, then it means that it was not mukhan for use on Shabbos. And if that's the case, it remains also the entire Shabbat, the fisheina min hamukhan. This was not something that was set aside for utilization on Shabbos, and therefore the entire Shabbos, it remains defined as mukta. So then that would explain the Mishnah. Ochanami, at the beginning of Shabbos, kimud lo yitkan mi'atmol, it was asur, and nobody thought that they're going to shecht it today, and therefore it should be asur. Since at the beginning of Shabbos it was asur, it wasn't viewed as a food, so because of that, it's not usable. Taina's abayat rababa, that doesn't explain the Mishnah, according to Rav. I'm sorry, it's not comparable. Midami, hatami kara mukhan la'adam, v'hashta mukhan la'klavim. Over there, it makes sense to call the nevela, or to call the issues that were not going to be eaten. So we're going to call it mukta when it was the beginning of Shabbos, because it's not roi for what we want to do with it now. Now we want to cut it up and feed it to the dogs. But over here, it was mukhan la'adam, and now you cut it, it's mukhan la'adam. So at the beginning of Shabbos, what is this animal there for? I mean, it's ultimately going to become food. So that means that it's considered to be food for Adam. And now it's also food for Adam. All that you've proven to me about Rabbi Yehuda's Shita here is that something that wasn't mukhan for the kind of use that you're making of it, such as something that was originally human food, and now because it died, it's no longer human food, it's animal food. And we want to cut it up, and therefore he says, no, no, you can't do that because it's a completely different item now. Mashenkin over here, it's the same as it was before. You looked at the animal, it was going to be steaks, and now it became steaks. So what's the big problem? Says Rababa, well, that's because you're making an assumption. You're making an assumption that an animal, when it's alive, is basically potential steaks. But that's not how to look at a live animal. When you're looking at a live animal, you're not looking at steaks. You are looking for animals for the full breadth and range of what somebody would be keeping animals for. And animals are very useful for making more animals, earliest kind of bots. And they do this all by themselves. So because of that, it's certainly a complete change in making it into food. And therefore, it should be considered mukta because it wasn't set aside for eating at the beginning of Shabbos. That's why I say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you've changed the type of usage So it's even more chomer than it was over there. In that case, where Rabbi Yehuda said it was mukhar l'adam for eating, and now it's mukhar l'behema, over here wasn't mukhar for eating at all. Says Abaye, excuse me, sir, if that's true, so then how, according to Rabbi Yehuda, are you allowed to shecht an animal on Yontav? Because on Yontav also, before Yontav, it was looked at not as steaks, but as a breeding animal or whatever you're going to be using it for. Now, all of a sudden, it's used as food? And you say that Rabbi Yehuda would never have been matir that? So then how do you shecht on Yontav? Before Yontav, it wasn't roi l'achilas adam. It wasn't set aside for that purpose, and now it is. Said Rabbi Abba, well, you need to be a little bit more flexible here. Actually, I'm not saying that it's not usable for eating. I'm saying that you have multiple uses. And what you really have over here is our classic case of quantum indeterminacy, which is called brera. So when you make up your mind and you make a determination of what it is that you're going to use the animal for, that defines the usage of the animal retroactively. And that's the inyan of the brera. So assuming Rabbi Yehuda holds a brera, so then that would mean that the moment that you actually shecht it, that tells you that it was omeit for shechita before Yontav. And we don't view this. Rashi actually speaks this up. This is not one of my crazy physics mishnagos. Rashi speaks out the Farish that the inyan of brera is that if you hold less brera, then you hold that the events are not determined; they're completely random, and the outcome is not in any way going to be definitive of what was going to be the outcome. Those words, what was going to be the outcome, says Rashi, are meaningless if you hold Ein Brera. There wasn't going to be an outcome. But now, if you hold Yesh Brera, it means that the outcome is actually linked to what was happening before. And even though it could be anything, the choice of that outcome now locks reality into a history in which this was the outcome. It's literally how he explains it. And therefore, if you hold of Brera, so you need to understand that this is true legabi, the concept of mukta as well. Mukta, we're talking about mukta, means that it is set aside. Just because you don't know what it's set aside for, that doesn't mean it's not set aside. It becomes clear that it's set aside for that purpose when it's used for that purpose. And therefore, if it's one of the options, so that it's either omedeta gadel or it's omedeta achila, so when you're looking at that animal, you're looking both at the possibilities of steaks and the possibilities of a stag, whatever. But essentially, it does become really usable because it was set aside. It now turns out retroactively that it was set aside for achila. Therefore, says Rabbi Abba, omedet l'achila v'omedet l'gadel. It actually has optional usages. If you ended up shechting it nishkata, you now have just found out, guess what? This was always meant to be eaten. All right, I'm eating it. Lo nishkata, but if you didn't shecht it, you now find out that, well, it looks like this is an animal that was meant to be a stag. So it stagged away on Yontav, but it didn't stake away on Yontav. And therefore, it would be considered to be mukta now. So, if that's the case, obviously, if you're talking about Shabbos, on Shabbos we know that there wasn't an option lechatchila, so I didn't have that possibility. And therefore, you can't apply the brera in that case. Because of that, it would be considered mukta. But on Yontav, it's perfectly okay because I know that it is always possible. Well, that's a lovely explanation, except for one minor problem. The minor problem is that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a brera. So how could you use this to explain why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed to shecht an animal on Yontav if the truth is it was Eimed Legadel, if he doesn't hold a brera at all? So that can't be the pshat over here that it's going according to Rabbi Yehuda Vachana. Would you mind showing me that? How do you know? Minolan, where do you see that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a brera? Now, we've had this Gemara in several cases. We always go through these cases according to, okay, so how do we know that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a brera? Is it because of the famous Braita? I'm sure you're all going to remember this because we've had it so often. Halokeach yayin mibein hakutim. It's Erev Shabbos. Somebody is right before Shabbos. He's driving by a wine stand of kutim. If you're talking about kutim, then this is obviously kutim that was before there was an iser. And this was just a shayla of demai. And now afterwards, remember, we made the gezerah, the kutim, we're like, but that's not the issue over here. The issue over here is demai. It just means people who are not necessarily mafresh trumas ha-maisers. So now you don't have a glass with you to set aside trumas ha-maisers. It's almost Shabbos. You know that the minute that you get home, you're going to have to slam the door to the car. Your wife is going to start screaming at you for getting home so late right before Shabbos. You're not going to have a chance to do a darn thing. And therefore, you want to make sure that this is going to be okay to drink on Shabbos. So what do you do? So all you need to do is you say, look, I'm going to be drinking from this bottle over Shabbos, right? So I am going to leave over the stuff in this bottle. I'm going to leave just enough for me to take off trumas and maisers. So now, if we're taking off, let's assume you've got 1 liter, all right? So you've got 100 units. So you say, Shnei Lugin, 2 of those units, I am going to be leaving at the bottom of this barrel, or this bottle, and that is my truma. And that's 1 out of 50, and that would be a normal truma. Now I'm going to take off another 10%, essentially, as my Rishon. And then I'm going to take off, the next level is going to be 9 of these, here we were talking about units, whatever they are. So these 9 units are my Sheni. And you could be mechal that my Sheni right then and there as you're driving in your car towards your house. And then you get home, put the bottle on the table, and now you've got wine that is kosher. You can drink it immediately. Vishotemiyad, even before anything was left over. Obviously, you have to be careful to remember to leave over that wine. So it says Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, they say, you can't do that. Now look, I mean, the whole point that Rabbi Meir was making over here was that you could take off trumas and maaseros retroactively by using Brera. Now, you have no idea which molecules are going to be left in which place in this bottle at the end of your Shabbos, right? But that doesn't matter. Whichever they were, that was the one that was Truma right now. Not later, now. Because it says you can then go ahead and drink from this wine. Because obviously the stuff that you're drinking is not the stuff that's going to be left over. So that's not a problem. And whatever is left over will turn out to have been meant to be left over from the beginning. So he holds a brera. Masha Enkin Rabbi Yehuda, together with Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Shimon, don't hold a brera. And they say, you can't do that. You're going to have to actually take off trumas and maaseros. Nah, that has nothing to do with brera. That, it says beferish that Rabbi Yehuda told Rabbi Meir. How can you do that? Let me ask you something. What happens if the bottle breaks before, huh? And then it turned out that everything that you were drinking tevel? Because you never did end up leaving anything at the bottom of that bottle, did you? Because there wasn't any bottle. So now what are you going to say? So therefore, yata modesh, ama yibaka hanon. Aren't you worried about the fact of the skin breaking open, which would mean that he never took off trumas and maaseros, and all the first stuff that he drank before the bottle broke is pure tevel? How can you do that?
Because it's no skin off my wine.
As Rabbi Meir responded, I'll worry about it when it happens. Well, worry about what if. This is not a what-if world. This is a pure Brera world. And therefore, you'd think that the one who holds a Brera definitely holds what-ifs. But no, it doesn't go that way. And therefore, Tainis Rabbi Meir, there's no problem. But that means that the issue between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir was not whether you could rely on Brera. It was whether you got to worry about broken bottles. So what does that have to do with proving that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a Brera? Sorry. That can't be the point. All right? I'll bring you another Gemara with which we are very familiar. And that is Midatani Ayo. Ayo explained the Tani Ayo. So remember, let's just review for a moment so we don't get confused here. Let's remember how an Erev Techumim works. Now, you've got over here two Bate Knesiot that you go to from your little village or your little forest or your little Richie's home on the island. Now, the question is, they are out of reach, you see, and you're not going to be able to go unless you make an Erev Techumim. So how does an Erev Techumim work? An Erev Techumim works by your putting before the very end of your tchum, you put a meal down to say, this is essentially my Mokum Shvisa for Shabbos. And then your point of Shvisa is moved 2,000 amos further to that direction, which means you've cut out your ability to walk at all. And let's say this is the east. You can't leave the town to the west at all because you just moved your Mokum Shvisa 2,000 amos more to the west and so on. So if you have a problem in having two Bate Knesiot and you don't know at this time where the shear for Shabbos is going to be, and you're only going to actually discover on Shabbos where it is that the Chacham who's giving the drasha, where it is that he's going. Of course, the opposite may be true. You want to go to the other shul. But whatever it is, you don't know which shul you're going to want to go to. So what you want to do is you want to put down two Eruvs, one to the east and one to the west. And you want to say, if it turns out that the Chacham shows up in the east, then the Eruv should be to the east and I should go to the eastern shul. If it's to the west, that's not to be confused with Eastern Parkway, the Eastern Shul. Nobody is talking about any specific cult or anything like that. And if he comes to the west, I want to go to the Western Shul. So can you do that? And then when the Chacham shows up, the Erev automatically clicks into the place where you want it to be because of Brera. Can you do that? Now let's make it very clear. What if you don't know where the Chacham came, but the Chacham already arrived? It's just that you're going to look when you get home, you're going to look on the internet and it's going to say where the Chacham came. Is that Brera? No, not Brera. Why? Because it's just a normal condition. It does not require doing something retroactively in the past. The Chacham already came. You don't know where he came. Your knowledge is not the point. You can make your Erev dependent on a fact. If the fact is that the temperature is high in the west, I want it in the west. But I don't know. If the temperature is high in the east, I want it in the east. So wherever the temperature was high, that was the condition. That is a typical condition that does not require any type of quantum entanglements. It's just simply what you don't know, and you can find out later. But Brera is where nobody knows. It hasn't happened yet. That's the difference. So keeping that in mind, we can easily understand the Braita of Ayo and the discussion that relates it to Rebbe Yehuda. So since Ayo said that according to Rebbe Yehuda Omer, Ein Adam Matna Shnei Dvarim Ke'achad, you cannot make your Erev to two things at once. Only there is one case where you could. You could say, if the Chacham came to the east, I want my Erev to be in the east. If the Chacham came to the west, I want my Erev to be to the west. But you cannot say that if, let's say, there's two Chachamim that come, and I will make up my mind on Shabbos which one to use. Then you can't do that. Lekan ulekan lo. You cannot make a choice later or may have somebody else make the choice later and show up in that shul later. That you cannot do. Now, we discussed that, Braita, because we didn't understand it originally. ve'avina ba. Well, what's the difference? What's the difference? Why can't you say that you'll choose on Shabbos which one to go to? Because of Ein Breira, that's what you're saying. So isn't determining whether you're going to use the one the Chacham came to the east or the Chacham came to the west, isn't that also a problem of Breira? And Rabbi Yochanan explained, of course not. In that case, the Chacham already came. You just don't know where he came to. So that's talking about Kvar Ba'Chacham. And then when you find out, that's where you want to go. But the event happened. Masha Enke, the Breira case, is where the choice had not yet been made. The Chacham didn't show up. You didn't decide where you want to go, whatever the situation is. And that's where Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira. So therefore, Ayos, as you see, he doesn't hold the Breira. So therefore, we cannot say what Rabbi Abba said. Rabbi Abba claimed that the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says you can't eat it on Shabbos is because there was never an option of Shechita on Shabbos, but you can eat on Yontev because there always is an option, and Breira defines which option you took. But now it turns out that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold that, so forget it. That cannot be the basis of the Mishnah that Rav claims is the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda cannot be the one who says that animals are not meant for eating. So let's try again.
Isn't it interesting that Ayo means where is he?
Yes. Very much. Elo Omer of Yosef. I'll tell you which Rabbi Yehuda. This is Rabbi Yehuda about Kalim. This is a Mishnah in Shabbos. And we're talking about the type of Kalim that don't have any use on Shabbos, and those are considered to be muktzah. Something that has a use on Shabbos is usable for whatever use you could make of it. So that's Rabbi Yehuda and Kalim. It's not. Kol ha-kelim ha-nitalin b'Shabbat. If you have a kli that was meant to be used on Shabbos and it broke, shivrayem nitalim. If it broke on Shabbos, you're still allowed to use the broken pieces as long as they are still a kli. They need to be able to do something. They can't just be shattered pieces of glass that are unusable for anything. So, for instance, let's say you had a nareva, you had a mixing bowl. It's smashed, but there's big pieces here. Now, you could utilize pieces from the areva to cover over a pitcher, right? So, l'chasot ben pi chavit. Or let's say you've got even broken glass. There might be a piece of glass that goes right over a perfume bottle. Okay, so then that's fine. L'chasot ben pi apach. It's still a kli. It doesn't have to be the same kli. It was a kli, and it remains a kli. Rabbi Yehuda says, oh, no. It has to be, if it's a kli, that's not enough. It has to be the same kli. So, it has to be able to do the same thing that it did before so that it fits the same category of kli. So, therefore, let's say it was a mixing bowl that broke. Then it has to be usable for a little bit of oatmeal. So, before it was going to be this big mixing bowl to make challah, now it's big enough to hold some oatmeal, you know? So, shivrei areva litzok letochan mikvah. Okay, so now it's a much smaller areva, but it's still being used for essentially the same type of thing you used it before. Or you've got shivrei zechuchit. This was once a glass bottle. If you've got enough of a size of broken glass that it could still hold something, so maybe lotzuk letochan shemen, it can be used to have a little bit of oil that won't spill out. So then it's the same type of kli. But what does that show you? That Rabbi Yehuda holds, it's got to be me'ein melachtan. Yes, but me'ein melacha acheret, no. Why not? I'll tell you why not. Because apparently, according to Rabbi Yehuda, kima de lo itkan mi'etmo lahach melacha, it's very specific now, mukta. It has to be prepared for the exact type of usage that you were going to be making of it. So that's considered to be Osir, Ochanami, Kivan de lo itkan mi etmo, Asura. So therefore, the question over here is a new concept of something that is not Mukhan at all. And therefore, before we thought, okay, Mukhan is just, it's Mukhan for Adam. But that's not the point. Is that Mulchan Adam, which is what we thought that we were talking about when we were referring to the animal? It's not Stam Mulchan Adam. It has to be something that is going to be ready to be eaten. And that is something that isn't considered to be at the beginning of Shabbos. But because of that, it's considered to be usur. Wait. That's no explanation. You can't compare the cases. In the case of a broken kli, hata mi'ikara, it's called a kli. Hashta, it's called a shever kli. And nobody refers to a shever kli as the original kli. And therefore, it's nolad. And something which is nolad on Shabbos is usur. That's the problem. The problem isn't a more careful demand about the level of hachana. The problem is nolad. Nolad means that something that was not previously in existence has come into existence. So if it was made on Shabbat, how can it not be muktza? They're the ultimate muktza because they didn't even exist. You say, but it did exist. No, that's not this. The areva is not the broken areva. Right? This gets into the issue, let's say, of ice cubes and water. So if ice is a different form, so then it would be something that would be nolad on Shabbos. This would be the question of making ice on Shabbos, right? So the same thing is true over here. We're not dealing with it. It's the simple case of muktzah. We're dealing with a new idea, something that came into being. And therefore, tainas abaya, it's not the same. The shever kli came into being on Shabbos. But you cannot say that the animal's meat came into being. Mi'ikara uchla was always essentially a foodstuff, and it's still a foodstuff. The only difference is that you have now taken out a piece of the meat, which is the equivalent of having a gigantic piece of meat and butchering it on Shabbos. So that's called uchla de'ifrat. You took it apart from where it was before. And we know that according to Rabbi Yehuda, he dafka is the one who holds uchla de'ifrat is mutter and is not called nolad. I'll prove it to you. Uchla de'ifrat shapir dami. How can I prove it to you? It's not. We have another issue also in a mission in Shabbos. Ein sochatin et ha'perot lotzi mehem mashkin. You're not allowed to press fruits in order to make juice out of them on Shabbos. Ve'im yatsu me'atzmam. And even if they came out on Shabbos, you would be usur to drink that juice. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, it depends. If the fruits were set aside to be eaten, then anything that comes out of them is mutter. But if they were set aside to be squeezed, then it's usur. So what are we referring to over here? We're referring to a gezerah. Nothing was done to these fruits to squeeze them. And therefore, you'd think that they were mutter. But we have a gezerah, midrabanan. You cannot drink this today, because if you drink it, and we allow you to drink it, so then people might actually go ahead and squeeze the fruit on Shabbos, which shechita would be asr on Shabbos, and therefore we asr doing something that may lead to shechita. Rabbi Yehuda said, if originally you never intended to squeeze it, you only wanted to eat it, so then why would you be tempted to squeeze it? You had these things to eat, and therefore there's no problem, and hayotze mehem would be mutter. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda actually allowed me to eat, so to speak, drink, same thing, to eat the juice that had previously been part of a bigger piece of juice, so to speak, in the kli. So the same thing is true over here. He didn't say that was nolad. He didn't say before it was a solid piece of food and now it's a liquid food. Yeah, it didn't bother him. So if that's true, the same thing is true over here. Before it was a food that was all together as an animal, and now you took out, so to speak, the part of the animal that is a steak. So therefore, you can't explain our Mishnah based on nolad. Sorry. Ay, ay, ay. Okay, but still, hold on a second. The same Mishnah does give us an explanation of which Rabbi Yehuda. Not what I thought, that it's about nolad. But didn't we learn about that Mishnah when we were talking about it in the Beis HaMedrash? Lav itmar Allah, Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel, Modeh Hayah Rav Yehuda L'Chachomim, Misalei Zeitim V'Anavim. Rav Yehuda admits that in a case where you've got specifically olives or grapes, that there he's also moda, that anything that drips out of them, even entirely on its own, on Shabbos, that is considered to be osir. Why? Because the only thing that Rabbi Yehuda had been matir in the Mishnah was dafka, fruits that are not normally viewed as juice fruits. So let's say you have rimonim. Rimonim are sometimes, of course, you make rimon juice, but people eat rimonim. You don't say when you look at rimon, you're looking at something that is squeezed. Bashein Kane, since rove of the olives and the grapes in the world are meant for making oil or for making wine, so over there, since most people use it for that purpose, just because this person put them there with his intent to eat them, doesn't allow us to ignore the danger that something which is l'schita kaime, alma kivet l'schita kaime, something that is meant to be squeezed, the owner essentially always took that into consideration. And yoiv daite, even though he set it aside to be eaten on his table, but he never completely determined, I'm never going to drink that. So if that's the case, the same thing is true over here. Since the animal is meant for shrita, ultimately, so therefore, yoiv daite. So the same way that we're afraid that a person would use grapes that he was planning on serving on his table, and he may squeeze them when he sees this animal, he still may, if we allow him to eat an animal that was shechted on Shabbos, he may actually end up shechting it on Shabbos. And therefore, we aser it. Huh? I think you forgot how this whole discussion started. The whole discussion started because Rav insisted that the Mishnah means you can't eat it today, right? And we were trying to explain, according to whom did Rav say the Shita? So in the Beis HaMedrash, they said it's Rabbi Yehuda. And then we started looking for which Rabbi Yehuda. We couldn't figure out which Rabbi Yehuda. Now you're coming up with a which Rabbi Yehuda. But the problem is that this whole thing was only done to explain Rav. And Rav is dafka the one who disagrees with the way you just explained Rav Yehuda. Midiu taima ela l'Rav? This whole rigmarole that we're going through to explain the Mishnah Libra Rav Yehuda was only necessary according to Rav. But Rav personally holds, Omar Rav, Chalukaya Rav Yehuda filu b'sale zetim v'anavim. He holds that according to Rav Yehuda, there's no difference, and he said you could even drink the wine or the oil that dripped out on Shabbos. And I do not have a chashash. There's no gezeira that maybe you'll end up squeezing them, in which case you cannot explain, according to Rav, that in the Mishnah it's going according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that we make a gezeira because maybe you'll end up shechting them. I'm sorry. So start over again. Oh, my gosh. All right. It's got to be a different Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Which Rabbi Yehuda? Will the real Rabbi Yehuda please stand up? El Amr of Sheshes Bereda Ravini, I'll tell you. It's Rabbi Yehuda about the question of whether you are allowed to move a lamp on Shabbos. It's Rabbi Yehuda de Neirot, the Tanya. Mitaltalin ner chadash, avolo yashan, devi Rabbi Yehuda. You're allowed to use a new lamp on Shabbos, and you can take it and put candies in it for the kids, and it will be your magic candy jar that Barnea rubs on like he does all the time. He likes to rub on those magic lamps. And the kids will know that they can have jelly beans that are in the lamp. No problem with that. However, you cannot use a lamp that had ever been used before, and that's because it is ma'us. Once these lamps were made, as we know, we could see all over Barnea's house, all those magic lamps, archaeological finds, they're all made out of cheres. Now, once you use that cheres, it gets all suited up, And that's not suited up the way Barnea dresses. It's suited up with carbon deposits, and it's disgusting to handle, and it's filled with old smelly oil and black burnt oil, and therefore it's mukta because it is ma'us. So that means that Rabbi Yehuda buys in to what we, when we started talking at the beginning to give a background, it means that Rabbi Yehuda buys into the intermediate stage of a mukta that wasn't actually set aside, but since it's disgusting, it's for all intents and purposes meant as, ooh, that's set aside from your mind, even though you didn't think about it. So since Rabbi Yehuda holds that, so since it would not be something that you would use on Shabbos, because you can't shecht it, so therefore it's considered to be mukta in the same way that the dirty lamp is considered to be mukta. What? What does that have? That's only mukta machos mius. Eimu d'shamet leila Rabbi Yehuda b'mukta machos mius. Now you're telling me that if it's also mukta because I can't do the iser that would allow me to use it, that he would hold the same thing? Mukta machmas iser mishamet le? Did you ever see that he held that? Now the truth is, as Tosis points out, at the end of the day, mukta machmas iser is more chomer than mukta machmas mius, and therefore this is not really a question that holds. But since in the end we do have a makom of saying that Rabbi Yehuda holds a mukta machmas iser, the Gemara brought it out this way. But that doesn't mean you should base a hierarchy of what is considered to be more out of mind based on mius or based on iser to learn it out from this Gemara. So just take that into consideration. But did we ever hear that Rabbi Yehuda holds that just because I can't use something, since it would be usher to use it, that therefore it's mukta? Absolutely we did. We do have that. Because the Tanan, even though it isn't a Mishnah, but it's a Braita that Rabbi Yehuda says, kol neirot shel matechet. Let's talk about metal lamps, okay? Metal lamps are not considered to be mo'us. They're not like cheres, that they become impregnated with this disgusting stuff. You could just wipe them off. They don't absorb, and therefore it doesn't become ma'us. So you could use a ner of matechet as your candy dish for the kids, unless that ner had been lit on that Shabbos. So in other words, you had a wick in this ner, and it was burning at the beginning of Shabbos, and then it went out half an hour later. Now the kiddies are coming over. You want to take it, wash it, and put jelly beans in it. And then Barnea can rub it, and the jelly beans pop out, and the grandkids eat it, right? No, you cannot. Why? Because at the beginning of Shabbos, it was burning, and you weren't going to be able to put it out then, and therefore it's not usable at the beginning of Shabbos. And once it's at the beginning of Shabbos, it's set aside for use on Shabbos. It's called mukta. This is a classic case of mukta machmas iser. And Rabbi Yehuda, in fact, holds of mukta machmas iser. Nope. Not good enough for me, says the Gemara, because over there, you lit it. So if you lit the lamp, then that means you were deicha it be a dayim. I mean, obviously, that's mukta. You put it out of mind by lighting it. You said, this is the lamp for Shabbos, not the candy dish. So that's why you can't use it, because deicha it be a dayim. But in this case, did I ever say, take this animal and tie it up and say, this shall not be eaten? No, I didn't do anything. You're just saying, it would memela not be eaten because it was usher. We don't see that Rabbi Yehuda holds a mukta machmas iser unless it was something that the iser was created by your choice and your specific action. Therefore, we still don't know which Rabbi Yehuda it is, and we're going to have to wait until tomorrow. Can you imagine? And this is going to keep Richie up all night, I'm sure. But what can you do? We leave on the edge of a cliff, Rich.
Richie was already...
And since Richie is not going to be able to... Since Richie's not going to be able to fall asleep anyway because of the tension, he might as well stick around and see what happens in Peah. That's what I would say. We have a hand up from a hand.
So, what about ice and Shabbat? Are we allowed to make ice and Shabbat?
Put that question on ice for now.
There you go.
Don't be so cold.
As you know, the Daf Yomi is usually not a place until we deal with the Etzem Sugya to bring up the question of the Halacha. It says that on all the websites. These sites are not meant for paskening. Go to your local Orthodox rabbi, follow Das Torah, and don't make the mistake of actually learning a halacha from your learning.
Except that three cycles ago, Rebbe focused on halacha.
Okay, and that we were using the sugya, but it's only when we were doing the sugya.
Nonetheless, karahi, velil modan, anu tzrichim.
All right, gentlemen. This, as you know, is a very big sugya, so it's not for discussion here.